Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2...
The voice of the American Redoubt. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you're listening to episode 1914, the 14th episode of 2019. Hope you guys all had a blessed week this week. We did. We had a blessed weekend. Got to meet so many of you. What a privilege. It was just great. From Friday, from the Lexit rally to yesterday at the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. Huge hit, great, just wonderful opportunity to meet so many of you and shake your hands, and it was good training too. So thank you guys for your support. This week, we've got a lot of stuff we're going to run down. We're gearing up for 2 weeks from now. We're going to be at the Northwest Preparedness Expo, and that will also be in Prosser, Liberty. That's something they do every year. It's an annual event, but last year they took the year off. They're doing a bunch of work at the venue where that is normally held. So really looking forward to that. We're going to have a full booth, the Amron booth. I'll be giving a couple presentations, one on communications, emergency communications. But this weekend, it was introduction to emergency communications. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be talking about communications beyond the basics, beyond introduction. It will be basics of emergency communications. I've got an Amron core operator who will be putting on some excellent presentations on using digital modes. Digital communications is where it's at. That means not voice, but texting and sending forms and letters back and forth over the radio. So that's really exciting. He's going to be doing that, so I don't have to. And also, I will be talking on digital and electronic security. That's something that's overdue for us to talk about again, to come back as we see the cyber threat growing. More and more entities are spying on us, collecting our information. And if we don't stay mindful of that and remind, especially a lot of new folks, we really used to hit that really hard, but it's been a while since we've done that. So we're going to revisit that and try to get some patriots to start considering OPSEC, PERSEC, COMSEC, InfoSEC, security as it relates to how you operate digitally on the internet. So we got that to look forward to also. We're going to be talking about that. Let's see what else we got. Oh, on your calendar, don't forget to put T-Rex 2019. That's the scenario-based training exercise, Friday through Sunday. It's a three-day event, or 2.5 days technically. We usually end the exercise at noon Pacific time on Sunday. But that's July 26th, 27th, and 28th. July 26th, 27th, and 28th. It sounds like it's a long ways off, but it's going to be in your face before you know it. And we experience that every year as we're planning and preparing for that. So that's what we're doing right now with the Amron core operators. The team, we're just now actually we're behind the curve. We're usually ahead of the planning curve, but we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be good quality training and some videos and other information to help you prepare for it, so you know what to expect, and so you can understand better how to participate and why you might benefit from that, and the different ways that you can participate. We'll be sharing that information with you here coming up, so you have plenty of time out from the event to actually kind of get yourself prepared. Okay, so with that out of the way, let's get down to the news and commentary. Brought to you by the author, Glenn Tate, who, by the way, he and his wife, Shelby Gallagher, also the author of two sets of dystopian novels, who hosted the event at the Puget Sound Prepper Expo did a wonderful job. It was their first event, and they pulled it off very successfully. And they were there signing their books and meeting readers and fans, and that was really cool. They did just a wonderful job putting that together, especially for your first one. The first one's just chaos, and they did it. So good job. All 10 of those books are out, including audio. So check those out. Somebody else mentioned I mentioned a third book, at least a third, maybe a fourth book as well, with Radio Free Redoubt, Amron, and John Jacob Schmidt. So they said, you're famous. And I said, I didn't even know it. But I guess there's a couple of other series besides the Going Home series by A. American, and then also the Glenn Tate's great 10-book series, 299 Days. And a couple others. I got to pin those down and find out what those are. It's very interesting. So pretty cool. Okay, but in the news, from Bloomberg, the U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton warned this week. Well, he warned against deploying military assets specifically to Venezuela less than a week after the Russian troops and planes landed at an airport near Caracas. He says, we strongly caution actors external to the Western Hemisphere against deploying military assets to Venezuela or elsewhere in the hemisphere with the intent of establishing or expanding military operations, he said on Friday. He said, we'll consider such provocative actions as a direct threat to international peace and security in the region. Yeah, you know, that's not something we want. Our Russian troops backing a communist dictator who's clinging to power to be bringing in troops and military assets south of our border. That's not a good thing. So we'll see where that goes, but they are definitely flexing their muscles over this. And, of course, Russia is blowing it off. Oh, you guys are overreacting. Well, I know one thing. Never trust a communist. And I know the wall fell down, and they're not communists anymore, right? Well, they're backing a communist dictator who doesn't want to leave power. So I don't know. Once a communist, always a communist. I mean, I have a huge respect for Putin. Huge respect. He is a leader. He's a patriot. He loves his country. At a time, especially that we were wishing he was our president over the previous president that we had, who will not be named. But it's got communism deeply rooted in his DNA and that whole country. And I just think that we're probably going to have to duke it out at some point in the future. Hopefully our children or grandchildren won't have to deal with that, but we'll see. Speaking of President Trump, formally recognizing Israel's control of the Golan Heights, President Trump, this is from Fox News, President Donald Trump signed a proclamation on Monday recognizing Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights, reversing more than a half century of U.S. policy. Standing alongside Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House, I like that guy, Benjamin Netanyahu. What a very brilliant leader. I know he's got some scandal going on. I don't know, but everybody that I know of that's worth their salt has scandal surrounding them because the world wants to destroy them. So I'm very suspicious when I hear of scandal around, well, President Trump, for example, Representative Matt Shea, any elected official who's under the attack, especially by the left, when they're leading the attack, I'm suspicious. Well, while he was standing there, President Trump made formal a move that he announced in a tweet last week. The president said it was time for the U.S. to take the step. After 52 years of Israeli control of the strategic highlands on the border with Syria, President Netanyahu had pressed for such recognition for months. Trump's action gives him a political boost weeks before what's expected to be a close Israeli election. I love this quote I'm going to end with. Well, he says, today, aggressive action by Iran and terrorist groups in southern Syria, including Hezbollah, continue to make the Golan Heights a potential launching ground for attacks against Israel. Very violent attacks, Trump said. But then this is the part that just punctuated the whole thing for me. He says, this should have been done numerous presidents ago. And I wholly agree. Next story, let's go south of the border, back south of the border with this story from Bloomberg. Venezuelans protest days of power cuts that put Maduro, the communist, in a bind. Well, electricity has gone out in Caracas and most regions. Just this today, internet connectivity fell to 15% after the blackout. People protested. So they're getting really riled up. They're getting tired of their electricity going out over and over. But another article, yahoonews.com, titled Venezuela Returning to the Middle Ages During Power Outages. Walking for hours, making oil lamps, burying water. For Venezuelans today, suffering under a new nationwide blackout that has lasted days, it's like being thrown back into life centuries ago. Pay attention, my fellow American patriots. We're not so exempt from this. Even regionally, regional events, we could be facing this. And in fact, I'm going to share some stories with you later on in the show about Ameren Core operators who had responded to a letter that I sent out to all of those in Nebraska dealing with the floods. And I want to share with you some of their stories and what they had to say. I think it's worth passing on. I thank them for taking the time in the midst of this disaster. I thank them for taking the time to send in their reports about what's happening on the ground where they are. And there's lessons for all of us to learn from these stories. But this is interesting in Venezuela. Right now, they're also dealing with power outages, internet outages. It's telecommunications, communications. Are you getting this? Communications are down in much of the country. People are starving not just for food and clean water, but they're starving for news and information. Something that I referred to this week at the expo this weekend, yesterday. They're saying we're forced to get water from sources that obviously aren't completely hygienic, but it's enough for washing or doing our dishes. Because long lines of people, the activity can take hours of waiting. And elsewhere, locals make use of cracked water pipes, but they still need to boil the water or otherwise purify it. I've said this before in studying previous disasters and disaster exercises like the Cascadia subduction zone. Water, water, water. I mean, stop. You already got a couple cases of ammo. Good on you. Before you buy your next one, go and buy a personal water filter, such as a Pure or Life Straw or a Sawyer, a personal water filter for every member of your household, and buy a large water purifying system for your whole family as well. You can do all of this for as much as a cost for a case of ammo, relatively close to the same cost. And then, of course, like pool shock and other, you know, chemicals that you would treat, like swimming pools for treating large amounts of water. If you can purify that water and then filter it, which also purifies it. Water, water, water. You've got to have the ability to, you will die. You will die with all your ammo sitting around you if you don't have water. Or you'll die from dysentery because you're going to drink the water anyway because you have to. And then you dehydrate from dysentery. Bad stuff. So learn from other people's lessons. There's a lot. In stores, cash registers no longer work and electronic payment terminals are blanked out. And that's serious in Venezuela, where even bread is bought by card and because of the lack of cash. Some clients, trusted ones, are able to leave with written IOUs. Well, can't plan on that. It shouldn't be part of your emergency plan. I'll just write IOUs. That's only going to last for very long. So they're saying we make lamps that burn gasoline or oil or kerosene, any types of fuel. And they're saying we've returned to the Middle Ages. That's the people on the ground there. Well, a little further north of Venezuela, Trump's cutting aid because of another, what they're calling the mother of all caravans now, of illegal migrant invaders coming up through Mexico. He's cutting support now. U.S. government cut aid to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras on yesterday, after President Donald Trump blasted the Central American countries for sending migrants to the United States, and he threatened to shutter the U.S.-Mexico border. Amen. That's what our troops were for. Oh, and I didn't pull in the story about the commandant of the U.S. Marine Corps a week ago. stating that putting Marines on the border of the United States on our southern border poses an unacceptable risk to our military. What type of risk? Well, he's saying that because of this, I don't have the story in front of me. I wish I would have pulled it up, but I'm just going off of memory. He's stating that that it's going to pull away from funds that have been slated to support training operations in other countries. So it affects their readiness because they're not training in another country. They would have to be using those funds to support operations on our southern border. And so he says that poses an unacceptable risk to our readiness. Well, I'll tell you what, the Marines, hoorah, are always ready. And the funds are there to protect our border, which, Commandant General, is your primary responsibility, is to protect our border. And this general needs to resign. That's a disgrace to the Marine Corps. It's your number one primary responsibility is to defend our borders, and our borders are under attack. And I would even guess, without even researching it, my gut's telling me this is an Obama era appointed career politician slash general right out of the Pentagon, who's probably licking the boots of every appointed person under the cabinet of the previous president. Did I just name him? Did I say it? Did I slip? I don't know if I slipped. I'll have to go back and try to listen to that. Oh, man. I got emotional. Okay. So at a rally on the border in El Paso, Texas, Democrat presidential hopeful Beto O'Rourke announced Trump's immigration policies as the politics of fear and division. This is a Democrat who was, what, ate dirt in New Mexico last week. So our little dirt eater toddler is telling President Trump that the immigration policies of President Trump is just from the politics of fear and division. Of course, that's not to be confused with the politics of the Democrat Party, which is that of delusion and confusion and perversion and hypocrisy and lies. Their policies have done nothing but divide us as a nation and separate us from our Christian heritage, which is what actually made our country, the United States of America, exceptional. In Jihad Watch, Canada's foreign minister tells the United Nations white supremacism and Islamophobia are among the gravest threats facing the world. Not globalism. Of course, naturally, this is what globalists are going to say to other globalists. So this really shouldn't be earth-shattering news headlines. But Canadian Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland has told the United Nations that white supremacism and Islamophobia are among the gravest threats facing the world. Well, I thought the previous president said it was climate change was the most gravest threat. Well, probably is right after white supremacists and Islamophobia. Of course, they get to define what Islamophobia is. Calling the Islamic threat for what it is Islamophobia in their mind, so... The Canadian government also asserted this week that Canada rejects Israel's need to defend itself from jihad attack and does not recognize Israel's control of the Golan Heights. So they've lost their minds north of the border. Anything to take our eyes off communism, socialism, anarchism, which is interesting that the shooter in New Zealand that they're trying to get mileage out of, but it's not really working out for him because he self-identified as a communist and a socialist and an anarchist. But anything to take our eyes off the Islamic world domination effort that's going on. Now from the Go Armed Everywhere category of the news, in Germany, 10 Muslims, including at least one migrant, arrested for jihad massacre plot. There was a raid that involved apparently six cities. Police have detained 10 terror suspects who were allegedly planning an attack in Dusseldorf. Special units have conducted raids in parts of North Rhine-Westphalia and Baden-Württemberg in Western Germany. That's not West Germany, it's Western Germany. A total of 10 Islamic suspects have been detained on suspicion of terrorism after German police conducted an anti-terrorism operation in the western states of North Rhine. Okay, so they've been detained So in a couple weeks, they'll probably be out because they don't want to be accused of being Islamophobes. Also, from the Go Armed Everywhere category, California Muslim writes, I will assassinate your pastor in the name of Allah. I will burn down Christian churches. Well, he's just responding to what ISIS and Al-Qaeda is calling for all jihadists to do across the world. So apparently he did this publicly. So he's been intercepted. We'll find out what happens from that. But that just reminds me of why Christian churches now are arming themselves. And generally citizens are as well. Unfortunately, that's in the People's Democratic Republic of California, where even volunteer armed church security teams can probably only have a 5-round magazine, although that could be changing as well. Should be able to get to that in a little bit. A court just yesterday declared the California magazine capacity ban as unconstitutional. From the 10th Amendment Center last week, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson signed a bill into law decriminalizing the manufacture and possession of firearm suppressors in the state, oftenly referred to as silencers, but they're not. They're noise suppressors. The new law not only removes a layer of state regulation, it will help foster an environment hostile to federal gun control in Arkansas. So, hallelujah. Good for you guys in Arkansas. Now, finally, from the stark raving mad category of the news, this is brought to you by rhinopack.org. That's the Rhino Hunters of the Inland Northwest Political Action Committee. Rhinopack.org. They've got a drop down menu from the tab labeled Stark Raving Mad. And so I chose one for you. The Stark Raving Mad story of the week is titled Christian Graduates Need Not Apply. This just came out on yesterday. Graduates of Christian colleges and universities are experiencing employment difficulties, especially in the teaching and nursing professions, according to Shirley Hoogstra, president of the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. Many schools either refuse to accept or merely trash applicants or applications. They probably trash the applicants, too. They're trashing the applications for teaching positions from graduates of Christian universities based on the perception that anyone who attends a school might adhere to primitive beliefs, beliefs such as the barbaric concept that marriage should be between a man and a woman. Christians might even doubt the scientific consensus. There are actually 13,497 genders rather than merely two. Christian applicants for nursing positions face similar hostility, not based on actual performance or beliefs, but on the perception Christians might hold archaic views regarding sexual deviancy, drug abuse, and other so-called moral transgressions. These institutions, which shun Christians, welcome Muslims. Muslims hold progressive beliefs, such as pitching homosexuals off rooftops, mutilating the genitals of pre-adolescent girls, and forcing women to wear burlap bags with eye holes. Muslims, likewise, believe marriage is only between men and women, one man and numerous women, that is. You can see the rest of that story and more over at Stark Raving Mad under rhinopack.org. So I do not have an Alerts USA Weekly Summary Intelligence Briefing this week. So I will turn this over to this week's public service announcement by Lady Liberty, and we'll be back with segment two right after this. Don't go away.
Hello, Liberty State supporters. Boy, do we have a lot of news and updates to report with the progress of Liberty State. First, the Lexit rally in Olympia on March 29th had about 75 people from around the state. While most of our county meetings get larger audiences than this event, it was still very inspiring because we had speakers from major statewide organizations including Caleb Collier of the John Birch Society, Scott Brown, president of the Washington Miners, the Washington State Second Amendments groups, and pastors speak on behalf of Liberty State. County chapters of the Farm Bureau and the Cattlemen's Association support Liberty State as well and shared with me that they wanted to be there and do support us 100%. Most inspiring of all were the 11 representatives there to speak on behalf of Liberty State or their supporting it. The list of reps speaking for it or who were in support of it standing there were Representatives Mary Dye, Bill Jenkin, Bob Sutherland, Bob McCaslin, Jesse Young, Kelly Chambers, Jim Walsh, Brad Klippert, Joe Schmick, Tom Dent, and Matt Shea. This is a huge amount of progress for this effort, considering there are only 20 counties in Liberty State. If you didn't hear your state rep listed, you might contact them and ask them why. While our county meetings are getting an average of 50 to 250 people, our Lexit rally was very uplifting to have seen so many reps there to support it. Those are the reps who are paying attention to their constituents and understand that Seattle politics have robbed Liberty State residents of their power of the vote for the past 30 years now. I want to thank everyone who also drove all the way across the state to show their support. We sincerely thank all of you for that. For all you supporters, what we're doing this year is bringing in our elected officials to join in and support us. At the county levels, our next action is to start inviting all our elected officials to our county volunteer meetings. We will ask them to come and speak and join in with our groups. So everyone start getting prepared to invite at least one elected official to your meetings in May to have them listen to your Liberty State presentations and inform them about and ask for their support of Liberty State. We want all of their involvement and input. In the meantime, there are so many county meetings and rallies happening, I can't even list them all. Please go to the Liberty State website to view the agenda on our events page. We just held the Lexit rally, and then Representative Shea hit it out of the park once again with his speaking event in Bremerton, Washington, at their Puget Sound Preparedness Expo that was a huge success, and where we also had a booth and we got to meet and talk to so many new people. The next Liberty State speaking and booth event will be at the Northwest Preparedness Expo in Prosser, Liberty, on April 13th. Check the events page soon and get involved while this is taking off. This is our time to shine, everyone. Make it count. We are now on the move, and we're going big and getting more support every single day. God bless this effort, and God bless all of you actively involved volunteers. We love you all and thank you all kindly for your support. I'm Lady Liberty, and this is a public service announcement on behalf of Liberty State. Visit us at libertystate.org today.
Segment two. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com, helping God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots just like you get strategically relocated to the heart of the American Redoubt, specifically in the panhandle of North Idaho. And, oh, that reminds me, I think I probably was talking to some clients of Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, because I spoke with several listeners that I met at the expo who said, I want to shake your hand. I want to let you know we're redoubting. We are getting out of here. We're sick of occupied territory. One couple, they're both just retiring from Seattle. They work in Seattle for the city of Seattle, and they're saying it is all they could do to hold on long enough to retire. Another, a couple younger couples, they're making the move, and they're moving to Boundary County, Bonner County, and they're getting up into the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho. Spoke with several folks that are moving either to Liberty or Idaho to the free zones. So God bless you guys. And if you need some help with that, check out SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. Now, speaking of this weekend and the Preparedness Expo, I taught a comms class. I talked about this at the beginning, and I usually start my introduction to emergency communications. I just talk about what's out there, what's available to you from some of the apps you can have on your cell phone in emergencies. Shortwave listening, shortwave radios. If you're not a radio operator, you at least get a shortwave radio, at least get a scanner, listen to local communications. And so it's a very introductory level course. And then, of course, with encouragement for those who feel the urge to advance so they can have advanced communications capabilities within their groups, you know, besides just the two-way Baofeng tactical level radio communications, but more operational, even strategic level comms, and get up into your HF communications and stuff like that. So I weave that out. Oh, by the way, Representative Matt Shea also gave a presentation on the current cultural threats that could factor into a potential collapse of our system, you know, the socioeconomic, political type of collapse in our culture. And he really focused on the Islamic threat. And it was, I actually recorded it, I videoed it, and I wanted to share the audio with you guys, but the audio turned out so horrible in that room. It was just, It was just it was bad, but the presentation was excellent. I mean, source documents really lays out this threat. Of course, that really affects us politically and socially. But how they're infiltrating our government, it's just really amazing. But he also brought up the Washington, the state of preparedness in Washington State. And he got a direct briefing from the individual who's in charge of the Washington's emergency preparedness from their Washington Military Department of Military. So we got a briefing on the Cascadia earthquake preparedness. I've shared this with you guys before, stating that they identified the number one failure point in their communication or in their preparedness was communications. But he was now Representative Matt Shea was talking specifically to the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo, which a lot of these people live on the peninsula, what's called the Olympic Peninsula, essentially landlocked. It was little highways, you know, going to the mainland that don't go, but there's hundreds and hundreds of bridges. And this report produced shows that there is a massive critical lack of retrofitted infrastructure, including bridges and overpasses. And their estimate is that it would be months before roads could be usable to access the Olympic Peninsula. You're on your own. And not to mention a 9.0 earthquake, like they're expecting one day to happen, would buckle and render useless almost all of the runways and airstrips. So they drop stuff in by parachute and, you know, pallets of bottled water and food and medicine and stuff. But it's, we're talking from Vancouver, British Columbia, all the way down to Northern California. There's just so much. It's so massive. The anticipated effects of that, you better be ready to be on your own for an extended period of time, like a year. Have enough food and water purification capabilities for a year and communications so you can coordinate that effort and aid and relief. But this week, I want to share with you guys the letters that I got this week from those in Nebraska that are dealing with the floods. And these are just really, really cool, firsthand, you know, personal on the ground stories. So, hello from Nebraska. I have been in touch with friends in the flooded areas, namely St. Edward, Nebraska. As you are aware of by now, the flooding affected the eastern half of the state and was a perfect storm of snow cover melted in one day by a lot of rain onto frozen ground. Five major rivers in the state flooded: the Missouri, Platte, Loup, Elkhorn, and Niobrara. And I hope I pronounced that correctly. I tried to get the St. Edward from the western part of the state, but there were no roads open for me to get there. He found a good map of the current situation, which has improved since last week, but several roads are washed out, along with bridges and some dams. In St. Edward, the water has receded and drywall is being torn out, which is good. Do that right away because mold starts growing like within hours. Seriously. Two houses in town are beyond repair. Businesses are assessing. The grocery store is back open. More importantly, the water has been tested clean, so the boiling order has been lifted. Again, water's affected, right? The Nebraska National Guard's delivering straw bales in the back of Chinook helicopters. God bless those pilots. We had a rescue situation outside of Omaha where a local fire rescue team's boat got caught on the top of a road sign that was just below the surface of the water. A Black Hawk was sent in and rescued two firemen and the idiot who drove around the barricades and got stranded in the first place. The Black Hawk did this in 50 to 60 mile an hour winds. Our men and women in the armed forces will never be given the credit that is due to them. The Spencer Dam was destroyed along with Highway 281, which was just a half mile or so downriver. Highway 281 is a major north-south route in the central U.S. from Mexico to Canada. The Erickson Dam, mentioned in the intel brief on Tuesday, held up with flying colors and is fine. Several levees around the area didn't fare so well in Norfolk and Fremont. Four deaths have been reported so far. A farmer rescuing people by Columbus had a bridge collapse under him in his tractor. Another person in Norfolk was swept away off the roof of his submerged car, and a third man was swept away in the current when the Spencer Dam collapsed. An 80-year-old woman drowned in her home near Columbus after attempts to get her failed. And he also posted the following on Facebook. While the rest of the nation will view the flooding in Nebraska as a disaster, Nebraskans see it as its finest hour. We were rescuing before the cameras arrived. We are quietly distributing supplies as we patiently wait until the water recedes, and we will calmly rebuild after the cameras leave. A Midwest grocery chain, Hy-Vee, with cooperation with the DOT, delivered a 7-truck convoy of food and water into Fremont last weekend. Fremont was completely surrounded by water, and the community of 20,000 had run out of most food. A firefighter friend of mine near there said the $500,000 homeowners had no water and about 1 hour's worth of food stored up. He is a prepper and was just shaking his head when rescuing these people who weren't in danger of drowning, just no supplies. Food for thought. No pun intended. My old ham radio club has been running a comms op in Fremont, and I haven't been able to drive there to help out, but we'll try this weekend. I'm headed to St. Edward as well this weekend to help out with cleaning, etc. Cell service has been steady, so communications haven't been affected that much yet. I will take my portable and maybe set up in St. Edward and send out a sit rep if the persistent nets are still on the air. I'm very proud of my state and their response to this disaster. You didn't see anyone crying for FEMA to come wipe their nose for them, and looting has been extremely unheard of. 73 and God bless from Nebraska. So very cool report, very encouraging. And once again, like I talked about this weekend, cell phones are extremely robust. What we see is lots of people trying to use them at once and then clogging up the system. So when you need to communicate in a disaster and you do have a cell phone service, text, send text. Text will get through, boom, so quick. It won't get hung up, can't find a connection, can't get service. You won't have to worry about that as much. So definitely I want to stress that. This started because I forgot to preface this at the beginning of this segment, but as soon as we saw the flooding going on, we kind of observed for a few days and started seeing how bad it was. I put out an email to those that I have email addresses for among our Ameron core operators in Nebraska, and I let them know that we have persistent presence nets going on all the time, and we're on the air for them according to our SOI digital frequencies, and we're beaconing and monitoring. So if they find themselves surrounded or need help and all other communications are down, that's their best chances of getting a hold of somebody that would be there for them. And we have had every day, and we normally do, we have Ameron operators on our digital frequencies throughout the day, just testing and beaconing and sending messages and our intelligence briefs back and forth. So there's almost always somebody there. We want to be there for these guys and let them know. But so far, the infrastructure has been holding up despite the floods. But anyway, I got some more to share from you when we come back from the break. So stay around and look forward to sharing that with you. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and this is the voice of the American Medallion.
Cut my teeth on wedding rings in the movies.
Hi, I want to take a moment to let you all know about a great offer that will put up-to-the-minute intelligence and breaking news in your hands, often minutes or hours before you'll hear about it on the news or anywhere else. The director of Alerts USA and the editor of the Threat Journal, Steve Oxtokolnis, is offering a discounted subscription to all of you as listeners of Radio Free Redoubt and members of Ameron. The Alerts USA subscription is normally $99 a year, but if you click on the Alerts USA banner at RadioFreeRedoubt.com or Ameron.com, that will take you through to a page where you can subscribe for just $75. Whether it's a natural disaster, active shooter, terrorist attack, or other rapidly developing security or emergency situation, you'll be among the first to know. Information is king, but accurate and timely information is priceless. I not only use Alerts USA, I count on it. However, if you're not able to pay for a subscription at this time, then you can still sign up for the free Threat Journal email subscription to get weekly intelligence briefs and stay in the know on what occurred in the previous days. Again, go to RadioFreeRedoubt.com or Amron.com and click on the Alerts USA banner. With segment three at Radio Free Redoubt. Segment three is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design, designs to keep you safe and to help you thrive. StrategicLandscapeDesign.com is their website, and they now offer remote consulting services so that they can assist you anywhere in the United States with planning your property in a way that integrates the key elements of water, food, energy, and security. The remote consulting service provides a lower cost option by using a combination of online data and information provided by the landowner to develop professional recommendations and design solutions customized for your specific needs. So check them out at strategiclandscapedesign.com. So I want to continue on with these reports. This is really great for these guys to take the time to share with us their observations and their experiences. I've got a few of them, and I read the one prior, in segment two. So here in segment three, I want to share with you a couple more. John, I live in an area that witnessed severe flooding, to include basements completely filled and buildings washed away. The local people banded together to provide aid and assistance to our less fortunate neighbors. We experienced what is now being called a 50-year flood. That is the worst flooding in 50 years. I learned a number of valuable lessons. Firstly, communications is vital. Without it, supplies don't get where they are needed on a timely basis. Secondly, there must be one person in charge, and that person must be knowledgeable of the overall management of disasters, no matter what kind. In our state, the local incident commander is the fire chief, not the mayor or other official comfortable with working with every branch of government involved. As we all have experienced, fire chiefs are only worried about fires and sheriffs about enforcing the law. Lastly, you will always run out of supplies when you most need them. We had plenty of donuts and sloppy joes, but we ran out of sand and sandbags just as the water was cresting. So, thanks for your love, concern, and your prayers. All right, thank you for sending that in. Good points. And then finally, JJS, thanks for the email, prayers, and the persistent monitoring presence. My family and I were not in any danger of flooding. I'm not sure if any of the others in Nebraska have responded back, but here's where things are at from my point of view. The best way to describe the flooding is imagine a hurricane slammed into the eastern half of the state. Several weeks ago, we were hit with a blizzard that brought 9 to 12 inches of snow. About 4 days later, another big snowstorm brought 9 to 12 inches more. A week later, the first day above freezing brought 2-plus inches of rain for the eastern half of the state. The western half got another blizzard that shut down I-80 from Grand Island to Wyoming. I remember that. That was huge. The ground was still frozen when the rain came, so nothing soaked into the ground. And the melting 18 to 24 inches of snow and everything flooded. Whole towns have been flooded. Many farms were wiped out, including all the livestock. I've heard many reports of different farmers losing 900 head of cows, 750 head of pigs, etc. And yeah, I believe the numbers I saw in a news report that I got on an app this week. That was saying as many as 100,000 cattle have been lost because of this flooding. 100,000 cattle drown. That is absolutely going to affect the price of beef in the coming months. Anyway, I'll continue on. I grew up farming in the flooded areas, and I know many people who are completely wiped out. Most homeowners don't have flood insurance because the insurance companies didn't consider them in a floodplain. Most insurance will only cover lost crops and fields as if the fields have been planted. Planting doesn't start until around April 29th. We are praying this season is salvageable. Many people didn't have time to get out or enough time to save much, if anything. I've heard several reports of people looking out their front windows and not seeing any floodwaters coming. They were keeping a watchful eye and listening to the news. Then 30 minutes later, they looked back out and their entire farm or house was surrounded by 2 feet of water. Lots of the flooding happened very quickly. Sadly, a fair amount of rescues were from people driving past the barricades into floodwaters. At the same time, the rivers were starting to flood from the snow and rain, and the Army Corps of Engineers released a massive amount of water, massive amounts of water from Gavin's Point Dam, sending an extra 90,000 gallons of water per second down the Missouri River toward us. This alone floods the Missouri River around here, but this was added on top of the already flooded rivers that run into the Missouri. This caused a massive backup of floodwaters, and it took extra time for the water to start receding. Lots of rescue efforts for the past weeks. The National Guard was activated. Rescuers were anyone with airboats, military-sized trucks, helicopters, planes, including personal planes, and even 2 Black Hawks were taking supplies and bringing people back out. I know several people working the rescue effort. Many worked 24 hours, slept for 4 hours, worked another 24 hours, and on and on. The rescue efforts of everyone, including civilians, was tremendous. Some things of note. Not much, if any, looting happened. I suspect this is because Omaha wasn't really flooded. The LEO guys, it's law enforcement officers, and the National Guard locked down flooded areas. They wouldn't let anyone in until they felt it was safe enough for people to go back. Even then, you had to have 2 forms of ID, and there still were time restrictions. Next, several cities had curfews enforced. Next, in Omaha, if you were caught going past the barricades for the flooded roads and bridges, you were ticketed and fined. However, this was just in the Omaha metro area. If a person went outside of Omaha, no one bothered you for going up to the floodwaters. But if you went into the waters, you were last on the list to get rescued. Every town and city except Omaha had clean water warnings. Some were told not to use the water, period. Everyone else was on boil alert. Omaha can become an island very quickly. Only 3 of 12 bridges in the area were usable for the week following the flooding. If those 3 bridges go down, it's a 10-hour drive to hopefully get around the rivers, if you can, using country roads. Nebraskans help each other. Neighbors help each other in big ways. The people of this state will take care of each other when things get bad. See a common theme here? Offutt Air Force Base was flooded. This is where the U.S. Strategic Command, or STRATCOM, is. Yep, that place is in my backyard. I wonder if President Trump's bunker is flooded. I don't know. I imagine they have the ability to seal that up pretty tight. National Impact, from his perspective, expects steaks and bacon prices to go up. Not only was livestock lost, but thousands of acres of farmland may not get planted this season. Feed prices will go up. Even if there is enough corn and beans elsewhere in the country to absorb this loss, just on speculation, prices will go up. I've seen this before. Offutt Air Base is operational. However, some hangars, non-important buildings, and the main runway are flooded. So, where are things today? Many schools have been closed indefinitely. Many state parks have been closed indefinitely. That doesn't mean permanently. That means until we can assess and determine otherwise. So, no defined date. Businesses in the flooded towns are not open and may not reopen. Most bridges and roads out of Omaha are back open. The handful that are not open won't be for months and months to come, some of them being major roads. Finding a place to rent or stay has become very difficult. I haven't seen much price gouging, and many places are offering some sort of discount for any displaced from the flood. That is cool. The repair work has begun. As a result, construction materials are going quickly. Rock quarries can't keep up, so road repair will take longer. other construction work is being put on hold, like Omaha's pothole problem. This isn't over. Gavin's Point Dam is still releasing the water because the massive amounts of snow the Dakotas have. Plus, the snow out west is melting, so the Platte River will be full or flooded into summer sometime. So here's some lessons learned, and then we'll take a break. And there's quite a few. Actually, you know what? Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll go down these lessons learned. Really good stuff. Lessons learned when we come back from the Nebraska floods, and hopefully you guys are taking some mental notes. This is Radio Free Redoubt. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. For years, we've specialized in locating and securing the best survivalist retreats in the most sustainable area America has to offer. The clean and abundant fresh water found in North Idaho's springs, creeks, lakes, and rivers are the primary reason folks come here, as nothing is more important than water. Excellent seasons, rich soils, and clean Rocky Mountain air make for an ideal growing environment with no threat of tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, or forest fires. The best part of North Idaho is her people, friendly conservatives with beliefs deeply rooted in the Constitution and a sense of community. I want to invite you and your family to join us here, to secure a peaceful future in a place that will sidestep much of the chaos that we all know is coming. Call me today at 208-667-1776 or visit me online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us. RevRealty.us, and may God bless you.
All right, thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight or during the week. If you're listening on your commute, like I know so many of you like to do, listen to the downloadable podcast. And you know what? As you guys do that, I want to thank you guys for spreading the word and sharing Radio Free Redoubt with your like-minded friends and family, and especially for those of you that are, or I guess not especially, but also for those of you who are looking for a place to fit in. You know the challenges that we're facing in our nation and our culture, and you know there's some very challenging times ahead. We believe that especially for Christians, that persecution is coming. We can see the writing on the wall. We'd be foolish if to ignore it. And, those that are on the wall, the watchmen, we have a duty to call out when we see things that our fellow countrymen need to know about, and especially from a Christian perspective. And since so few people are talking about this, I just, you know, it's, I feel this calling to be a watchman on the wall and to also give you guys a direction, you know, or recommendations, things that, as I see it, what we can do to be impactful and to make a difference and to make it count. And one of those things, you know, the contribution, I guess, that I bring is my communications, emergency communications, specifically military radio operator background. That was the impetus for starting AMRON, you know, for patriots to have a standardized plan of communicating and coordinating with another with one another, to share information, to stay informed and inform others. And really what has come from that is a tight network that has come out of all of that. And I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys. So for those of you that are looking for a place to fit in and you know what's coming, something should be done. Maybe you don't know where you fit into all of it. You're not really sure what you can contribute. Well, for those of you that consider emergency communications, especially if you get your ham radio license, you really become proficient and get involved in AMRON. I appreciate you guys and gals out there that are training regularly. And I want to encourage you guys, if you haven't been involved in AMRON for a while, maybe you joined and you just got interested in other things. Or I know we kind of went flat. That was because of just the things that I was dealing with. I wasn't able to give it the attention that it really deserved to challenge the organization, to challenge the members to really grow. And you guys that kept the mission going while I was dealing with that, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. But I am, you know, back and fully engaged and working with the advisory committee, and we're doing a lot of really good things. One of the cool things we're trying to do is beyond just the net word of the week to pass along throughout the nets is also every Tuesday, don't forget, there's an Ameron intelligence brief that's put out over the air. If you look at if you go to Ameron.com, just type in intelligence brief. And there's a white paper. You can actually type in white paper. And there's a white paper on the Ameron intelligence brief that's put out every Tuesday at 2000 hours Zulu, and then four times over the next about 40 minutes in different modes and different bands. And there are several operators that are on the air getting that and getting that disseminated throughout the net. So if you're able to, during those times, every Tuesday at 2000 hours, or follow the instructions according to that white paper, you'll know what time and what mode and what band, what frequency to tune into to listen, to start practicing using that. And I know that's during the day, but you can get that during the day if you're available. And then if you're not available during the day, then in the evenings, you know, our first and third Wednesday and Thursday of the month, those nets are going on, including evening nets. So you'll be able to tune in and get that intelligence brief. It's a great way for you to practice. So if you haven't considered maybe where you might fit in, consider communications. And with Ameron.com and at Ameron, there's a lot of great people standing by, you know, ready to help and mentor those. And we've got a lot of great resources on the website in the meantime. I thought I'd throw that out there. A little plug for Ameron and emergency communications, because it's so important. But the sponsor for the fourth and final segment are our friends over at Works Holsters. Works LLC is the company, and their website is works.com. That's with Works with a Z, Works, W-E-R-K-Z as in Zulu. For your custom-made holster and magazine carrier needs, Kydex holsters and magazine carriers. And also those guys have offered for, and I have one, I have a holster for my Glock 19 that's got the Liberty State seal on it. It looks really good. But when you buy, you know, get something with the Liberty State seal or the Liberty State flag on it, they donate part of the proceeds to help support Liberty State. So, especially if you're living in Liberty State, it's a great way to show your support. Okay, so let's talk about this fourth and final, or this last section here on the Nebraska floods. The Nebraska floods. Now, this is a continuation on, and where I'm going to pick up is where I left off, and that's when he was just starting to say, things I learned, lessons learned from the floods, that actually people are still dealing with the aftermath of that. And as you know from the previous segments, we're probably going to feel the effects of that regardless of whether or not you live in Nebraska. All across the country, we're going to feel the effects of that because of the beef and the pork and the farming industries that are, I mean, that's the breadbasket of the United States, or one of the major, major breadbaskets for food and fuel. So anyway, here's the lessons learned, things I learned, and then we'll close out with this. He says, anything can happen to anyone at any given moment. Get prepared. Ding. Got it. Know the area. At least a 200-mile radius that you're in. Know it very well. I agree with that. Look at Google Earth. Look at Google Maps, and look at the satellite view, and really get familiar. Go out there on a drive or a ride. Jump on your bike. Jump in your car. Go explore some of these areas and really intimately know where does this road go? Where does this connect? Oh, you didn't realize that was a shortcut to get over the highway such and such. Explore that stuff and know. Pay attention to, especially flooding, which areas are low, which are down by the water or could get flooded. How many bridges do you have to cross to get from here to there, your bug out location or your friend's house or your parents' house, whatever it is. Pay attention to what's happening in that 200-mile radius and think about what effects maybe 8 to 24 hours in the future. Saw this flood coming during the rain. I had about 8 hours to react because I was aware of my surroundings and realized what was happening and thought bigger than my immediate area of Omaha. I knew the major rivers would flood and that certain towns were going to flood like never before. A good example is Craig, Missouri, small town next to the Missouri River with a levee to protect the town, just like many of the flooded small towns in Nebraska. He stops short here. He says, if all the, I'm not sure where that the rest of that went, but let me get down to his list. Be able to bug out quickly, even in Nebraska. Being prepared, and this reminds me of a story in Konkanoli with the Ameron operator that contacted us to let us know during the wildfires that that town was completely grid down and they needed assistance. They needed communications help. So we deployed. But what was interesting is the Ameron operator in a town that's with two converging fires on it, his emergency vehicle, his bug out vehicle wouldn't start because he hadn't started it in so long because the batteries were dead. And he said something very, very interesting and really got my attention. He said, this is our bug out location. This is where we go to. This is where friends or family would come to us in case a major collapse and they had to bug out. It was never considered we would have to bug out from our bug out location. So even if you think you've got the solid, you've got the food supply, you've got everything set up, and there's you, there you are. You are the bug out location. And all of a sudden, you have to bug out from there. Is something he said, I would never have thought that that would be something that I would have to bug out from. So that was a great learning experience. Being prepared is also knowing when to bug out. Next, he says, water is the first thing to go. Bingo. I've been saying it. Water, water, water. Have some stored for immediate use, but more importantly, have a way to cure drinking water for some time to come. Have a plan for this. And this guy's in Venezuela hauling water from the mountain. They get to drink it all by the time they get back home just to survive the trip. Yeah, you got to have water. Procure it and treat it. Hotel rooms, Airbnbs, and rental houses are the second things to go. Again, have a plan. Exactly. Have your own shelter, even if it's a wall tent, whatever it is, have some form of shelter over you or an adequate vehicle. Finances are part of bugging out or bugging in. I know people who decided to stay because they only had $134 to their name. They had time to evacuate. They instead got rescued by a boat with nothing but the clothes on their backs. House, stuff, cars, and barns were all lost. Have a plan if family gets separated. I personally know kids that were separated from parents for 4 days through this flood. The two most important things I learned. I need to assess the situation for what it is. Get my emotions out of the decision-making process. It's emotional, leaving stuff behind, like homes, family, things, cars, pets, survival equipment, etc. I can't let my emotions put me or my family in danger. I need to prepare myself for those kind of decisions. Stuff skills. Most people stayed because of their stuff. Let it go. Declutter. As someone who prepares, I can't hold the stuff I amassed to survive SHTF tightly. No matter how much I spend on it, its purpose is to help me survive. If leaving it means I survive, I'm leaving it. It's going to be a while before some places find a new normal. Omaha and Lincoln are not affected too much at all, so things will seem normal in a few weeks to us. I'm still shaking my head. I can't believe people had only 30 minutes to bug out in Nebraska. Thanks again for letting us know you're thinking of us. Juliet 22. All right. Thank you, sir, for that excellent on-the-ground assessment and your own thoughts about preparedness. As you weigh your own preparedness and your mindset, these are really great things to pass along. I hope other people benefit from it. Real-world disasters happening to our people. But they want you to be able to learn those lessons and learn from other people's experiences so you can lessen the effects and the impacts on you. And that's all I got this week, guys. This was your Nebraska Flood Report podcast. So hopefully we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks in Prosser, Liberty, for the Northwest Preparedness Expo. really good. Liberty State's going to have a booth there. Amron, of course, is going to have a booth and a large presence. And I look very forward to seeing all of you who are able to make it. Until then, you guys have a blessed week this week. Stay strong. Be safe. 73. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.